In a democracy, who gets to be heard? And who is listening? And what's radio got to do with it? This is Hearing Voices from NPR, the best in public radio, supported by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. This week, it's Vox Pop, the voice of the people, remembering 9/11. In public radio, we have a website called transom.org, where we share information about tools and techniques for making radio and getting on the air, getting heard. In this hour, you'll hear work from that website, from producers whose pieces did not fit in the usual places, and from citizens whose voices did not fit. Wednesday Kennedy is a performance artist from Australia. She was living in New York City on September 11th, and afterwards she roamed the streets with her recorder and made a collage of the voices she gathered.
Sorry we're late.
She said she wanted to let the city's people speak for themselves, and that her piece, which she calls Last Night in New York, is a journey through the voices of New Yorkers trying to find balance.
Dear Natalia, I love New York, and New York loves me. I am polygamous Pollyanna, and the city is my muse. Every stranger is a story. Every story an affair. Today, I met Thoth in Central Park. And tomorrow, I have a meeting with the man who'll change my life.
When you wake up in the club, what's the worst that could happen?
Skyscrapers are empty, the subways are quiet, the frequent flyers are grounded, the concerts are cancelled, and we are filling churches, mosques, and fresh kill trucks. We are praying to a God we're not familiar with and hoping there's time to make peace with him before we go. Any minute now.
The devil knows how to deceive man, and we're leaving a world that is in total darkness, and the great darkness is in your own church. And 99% of your churches are run by the devil.
I am the bomb waiting to go off. Tick, tick, boom. A play for the new millennium, a little ahead of its time, but right on target. And what will be the next big thing? Now the last big thing is still ringing in our ears.
Top that, big boy! Big boy.
We will do whatever it takes to smoke them out and get them running. And we'll get them.
The people.
21st
I have war thoughts, but my body has been wounded. I'm a soft cotton doll, wandering the city alone, waiting for another random attack of madness to take the world out from under me. Any minute now.
This is it, ladies and gentlemen, this is it. Those are our final days. Everything, repeat, everything must go. Our loss is your gain. No reasonable offers will be refused.
There is it for four falling down sail, final days, final days. There is it for four falling down sail, final days.
25 cents for the New York Post. 25 cents for the New... Or you can do it for 75 cents.
When I woke up, I saw it on the news and I came right to the park. It was like walking the library with no books. What can I read to comfort my mind? What remedy shall I take? Because I need something.
That's right, brother.
I needed to be medicated. And there was none. Everybody was, I was like, oh God, I might ride down the street and the damn sidewalk blow up. A building might fall on me, anything. I said, Lord have mercy. No. Not where I live at. Keep that in them foreign countries.
While the dead are still missing, the missing still breathing, we are all buried alive.
Where was she?
Each breath connected to an air pocket in the rubble.
No, she was early. She wanted to be early, but didn't she?
We wait for miracle stories.
You see Judy?
Happy endings.
Just keeping up hope is all we can do right now.
So people have given up hope.
We're not going to give up on them. We need them too much. And it just, he has to be here somewhere. Just find him, somebody find him.
No, kill him. Stop if you want to. Kill him. I ain't average. They don't give a f*** about us. They give the f***ing people. Why are you jealous?
He said, Johnny, look. They got posters up to say the people are missing. They know they dead. And then you know what that made me think? Well, maybe they just evacuated the building and took them all to another country. Told them they'll give them different looks and different identities and we'll pay your family off and nobody's dead.
They're lucky I'm not president because I would have bombed that place already. About an hour after I discovered that it came from over there, wherever it came from, I would have started pressing all the buttons right there.
We've been crashing ourselves into buildings for years with the drugs and the prisons and the gun shooting and all that, the police brutality. All of that was combined in a big airplane crash, and that's what America is like all the time. America is in a constant state of shock all the time, but it took that one big incident for everybody to see that America is seriously in trouble.
That's what I would have done.
Who we bombing, Sam?
Whoever they claim it was responsible for. What's his name? Ben Lobe or Kenobi or whatever the f*** it is. Some multimillionaire with all this money that doesn't like the United States of America.
The last time our government was forced out of the Capitol building was 1812 when the British burned it down. So to have our government forced out of the Capitol, to have essentially a guided missile full of American citizens used as a weapon against America sort of personalized things in a way.
Burn Saudi Arabia, burn Iran, burn Iraq, burn Afghanistan, burn all that shit. There won't be no need to be angry because the Jews got this, they was taking from it. Wouldn't be nobody fighting for it, everybody burned up. Fuck them. Don't have to worry about no more terrorism.
When I cleaned my room today, I was aware that the dust on my windowsill might have been flesh. I wanted to brush it reverently into a bottle and set up a shrine, but I couldn't stand thinking about it, so I ended up using a wet cloth. My heart is a bombsite, hollowed out but no longer empty. Suddenly everything has meaning.
Oh, there's a war going on right here in New York City already.
But they started it. We did not fly civilian planes into their civilian
building. No, but we starved hundreds of thousands of people through economic sanctions.
Are you talking about
Iraqis? We have dropped millions of tons of bombs on Laos.
And we should drop millions of tons more.
I am the terrorist.
I promise you, Mr. Bush and Mr. Giuliani and Congress, you fools, I'm telling the whole world, the whole wide world is watching. We are the children of the world, and we will not tolerate this gross discrimination and capitalistic bigotry and profit before people. That's capitalism. And that's why the World Trade Centers had to go down, because that's the center and the symbol of corruption and greed, as in the Greek and the Roman Empire and the Persian Empire. They all went down to...
They're not celebrating the deaths of innocent people. They're celebrating the fact that a power, an arrogant power that has gotten away with murder and claims its invincibility has been shown to be vulnerable. That's why they're celebrating.
Exactly.
And people have to ask, why is it that people in the Middle East and people all over the world hate the government of the United States?
Osama or whoever the terrorists are, which I think is a network of fucking pissed off, sick of the U.S. bombing their asses, right?
We have nothing with division. We're blacks, we're Jews, we're Chinese, we're Catholic.
But we know that under the skin,
the religion,
the science tells us that we need to
define us.
Yes, but
we're not Americans. We've never been Americans.
I'm not going to kill anybody that's innocent.
So if you go there, you're going to kill. And you're going to kill innocent. Because it's going to be your life for their life.
Constitution that doesn't represent anyone's rights. So then go somewhere else.
I'm not being rude.
No, you don't come in. I got a citizenship. I'm asking you.
You don't need a citizenship because you're not on the wall. I'm not telling you to leave.
These people got their priorities way out of whack. So,
what do you think about this demonstration?
I think it's a complete disrespect doing it in front of officers and firemen who lost their very friends not 5 miles from here, and they don't offer any solution whatsoever. I mean, no one wants to kill people, but sometimes, you know, you got to fight back. And they're living in fantasy land, and if we don't, more Americans will die. You know what I mean? And I find it to be very, very disturbing. I mean, I support their right to protest, but they don't realize that because we're a strong country, and because we fight in wars, they have that right to protest. You know what I'm saying? I just think that they are.
The world is angry. The world is dissatisfied. And America being in power is guiding the world into hell.
Jesus, he loves us. In New York City, New York City, it's time for us to pray. NYPD, we love you. We thank God for you. Thank God for your families. And we are praying for you. My friend, it's time to pray. It is time.
I really believe that
America has become increasingly de-Christianized, and as a result, I feel in my heart that God has allowed, you know, the Islamic fundamentalist extremists to come in and give us a wake-up call. And I pray that, you know, people will remember the foundations of our fathers and come back to God.
Ashhadu anna Muhammadan Rasulullah. Ashhadu anna Muhammadan Rasulullah.
Now, they're the world leaders, because if they wanted to, they could come over and just continue to do more. But they just made a point. Leave us alone. The Arabs made a point by attacking us.
Islam is the purest, most loving religion in the world. Bombing yourself in Islam is not, it's forbidden in the religion. Islam is the first religion to accept Jesus, Muhammad, Noah, David, all of them. All of them.
Rayando por ti, esta pena me duele, me quema sin tu amor. No me hace amar, estoy desesperado.
You fight, man?
Yes.
Are you scared about having to go off tomorrow?
Oh, am I fighting for America?
Yes.
No. I thought you meant was a professional fighter.
I'm a Dana Talia.
Fighter, not a United States Army. So
oh, really? I just saw
I love New York, and New York loves me.
Okay. What about you, Harrison?
Oh, I'm a professional boxing trainer.
You?
So you're a reporter?
Well,
or
I'm
a photographer?
Really a poet, actually.
A poet?
Yeah.
Okay.
They say the world has changed, and I know what they mean. My biological clock, which has not bothered me for a decade, is going off like a fire alarm. I'm starting to look at men built like tree trunks who look as though they can take impact. I want to live in a bunker and drop babies like bananas. Having a wonderful time. Wish you were here.
You get a chance to talk
Wednesday.
To world champions face to face, and you know, you can get their numbers too. And what is it that you create? Maybe you can send them something.
Last Night in New York was produced by Wednesday Kennedy for the Australian Broadcasting Corporation's program, The Night Air, with help from Brent Clough and Natalie Kestacher, and engineering from Roy Huberman. At transom.org, where this piece was featured, Wednesday said, "The world knows well the single voice of American military and economic power, but she wanted to broadcast the many individual, unofficial voices, a chorus, like a waving flag, a single fabric of bright, opposing colors, snapping." Wednesday's piece was recorded right after 9/11. This piece, by Matt Lieber, was recorded during.
I was in Brooklyn on my way to the subway when I heard the second plane hit, and I turned around and headed home. On my way back, I stopped by a field in a park which gave a view of the fires and the collapse. People were standing there, talking about what was happening, updating each other from their radios, and looking on. No one moved. Everyone just stood staring at the fire and the debris. And then I saw a man hitting golf balls in the field. He was on the side of the field opposite the Twin Towers, and he was swinging a 9-iron, lofting balls 100 feet in the air, losing them momentarily in the background of smoke, and dropping them in the middle of the field. just swinging away. I watched him for 10 minutes pulling balls from a pile, squaring up and cracking them into the field. He didn't look up to the towers, which had at this point collapsed, or at the smoke or the people watching. He just kept hitting balls. Can you tell me your name first, where you're from, all that?
Dave, Trinidad, Brooklyn, American citizen.
Tell me what happened and tell me what you're doing.
I heard two planes crash into the World Trade Center, and then someone told me the Pentagon, too.
Were you already out here hitting golf balls?
I was now coming to hit golf balls.
And then did the second building explode while you were hitting them?
The boat exploded while I was hitting them, yeah.
And it didn't...
I have no control of what happened. I don't have no control. If I stop, I can't go and do nothing. All I can do is stop, look, listen. And that's about it. I have nothing else I could really do. I'm coming to hit golf ball. I ain't no terrorist, you know what I'm saying? So I guess coming to hit, I continue hitting golf ball. I watched the fire was... the flame in the building and then it collapsed. But I can't do nothing. It's crazy, man. Crazy people, man. But I still don't have no control of what people do. And so I can't stop because that happened, you know what I'm saying? Just like you. Likewise, you ain't gonna stop because it happened, you know what I mean? We have no control over it. You know what I mean? Life goes on and everything could be alright.
So you think everything's gonna be alright?
Yeah, this is America, man. America, everything all right.
Golf Balls by Matt Lieber. Coming up, Vox Pop from an 8,000-mile ride across the country. That's in a minute when we return to Hearing Voices.
Hearing Voices is supported by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, a private corporation funded by the American people, and the National Endowment for the Arts, which believes a great nation deserves great art. From NPR, this is HearingVoices.com.
Welcome back to Hearing Voices. Vox Populi, voice of the people, Vox Pop. That's broadcast slang for the man on the street interview, and it's what producer Scott Carrier calls this piece. It's the result of his 8,000-mile drive through America a year after 9/11, talking to people, not pundits or experts, just people. They weren't sanctioned to speak, and he wasn't sanctioned to ask them questions. Their answers extend beyond the usual soundbite length. As Scott wrote in an email before he left for his trip, "I'm not sure of my route, but my basic plan is to try to talk to as many people as I can, asking a few questions. Is America different now than it was a year ago? What has been lost or gained? What needs to be done, if anything? These are the questions I will ask of everybody, but they are primarily an excuse to get people talking about how they've been feeling over the past year and what kind of vision they have of the future."
October 17th, 2 p.m. In America, we used to say, I may not believe what you believe, but I will die defending your right to express it. We could boil the idea of our country down to that one sentence, and it was a beautiful thing. I haven't heard that sentence in a long time, and I'm wondering if it was ever true. I'm packing up, getting ready to drive across the country interviewing people about the State of the Union, and my friend Penny comes by to say goodbye. She's also leaving town, but to work as a janitor for a year at McMurdo Station, Antarctica. I ask her why, and she says because she was there once before as a tourist and fell in love with a whale.
It's going to be okay.
All right, so do you think things are different now? You think things have changed in the past year?
Well, I mean, obviously they've changed to a certain extent, but I don't think they've changed as much as people say that they've changed. They say, you hear people saying often that, you know, we'll never be the same after September 11th, and we'll never be the same, but we're the same. Look outside. Everybody's doing the same thing. Nobody's changed their habits.
Did you have any faith in America before last year? Or were you didn't have any faith before, and it's no different now?
Yeah, I think...
Okay, so tell me about that. Why don't you have faith in America and the American system?
Well, it doesn't seem to be working. We're run by 225 rich people. You know, 225 rich people make our decisions for us, essentially. They're the people that have the money. They're the people that can lobby. They're the people that can, you know, dazzle our senators and our congressmen and our president. And I believe my voice, unless I shove it down their throats, it's not really heard. No matter how many times I call the White House to tell them I'm against things.
Why is it only 225?
Because there's a small quantity of people who are really, really rich. I've narrowed it down to 225.
October 20th, 7 p.m., Pinedale, Wyoming, John Perry Barlow.
I think that on the morning of October 10th, when the United States Senate voted to extend relatively undefined war powers to President Bush, that marked the end of the American Republic and the beginning of the American Empire. We have now given the presidency, the executive branch, the kinds of authority that were usually vested in kings.
Barlow is known for being a former lyricist for the Grateful Dead and a visionary philosopher in the cyber world. But he's also a former cattle rancher and CIA consultant who calls Dick Cheney a friend.
And I'm not at all persuaded that the massacre on September 11th had much of anything to do with the government in Iraq. But this is being completely lost. And in our desire to reach out and thrash somebody, something, having failed to make a clear and decisive victory against lowercase nouns like terror and evil, we are now trying to attack a nation state. And I don't think it's any particular coincidence that that nation state has the second largest oil reserves in the world. I can't imagine that my fellow Americans are willing to go out and kill innocent people and essentially enslave and oppress other folks to destroy their governments and occupy their country just so that we can go on driving SUVs. I mean, I cannot believe that we are that venal and short-sighted and mean. We've reached a terrible turn because we may be the most powerful country on the planet, but I don't really think that we are capable of taking on the whole world, certainly not if the whole world has the moral upper hand. I'm revolted. I'm disgusted with us. I'm ashamed of us. I have never felt so futile in my life or powerless. I feel like my voice makes no difference. And there's nothing I can do to vouchsafe a civilized future for my descendants.
Tuesday, 10 a.m., Crescent Valley, Nevada, on the Western Shoshone Reservation. Elder Carrie Dan.
The Arab people are something like the indigenous people here in the United States. the strong goes over and build homes on their land and take it by, probably as they say in the United States, by gradual encroachment. I know how it feels that, you know, to have your land taken by just because somebody builds a house over here and say, you know, we've taken over your land. That's basically the same thing that's happening in Israel. And I think the Israeli people or the Jewish people should return those lands to the Arabs. And if this war with Iraq starts, I think the United States is just going to have more problems with more Arabs in the different areas, because there's no way you can stop terrorism. You may put all your armies and things and, you know, go out and kill innocent men, women, and children, but you're not going to stop terrorism, because terrorism starts from the minds of men and women. It's a psychological warfare that's being conducted, because that is the only way they can strike at a mighty power. And they put fear into the mighty power. And I don't think it's going to be solved with arms.
Tuesday, noon, near Battle Mountain. A woman is hitchhiking with two dogs. She has blue eyes and is wearing brightly colored rags in tatters. Rhodey, 60 years old. She has Alzheimer's and arthritis and works on a ranch taking care of sheep.
The ones I take care of are between 75 and 100 sheep and goats together. And they're kept in a pen, and the sheep herder lets them out. And you have to stay with them. Walk around with them and put them back in before dark.
Well, so have you been following the news at all? Are you aware that the United States might be going to war in Iraq?
No.
You hadn't heard that?
No. I don't read the newspapers or watch TV.
What about the attack on New York and Washington last year, September 11th? You must have heard about that.
I didn't hear about it.
Oh, come on. Really?
Really.
You don't know what happened?
I didn't hear. I don't watch TV or read the newspapers, ever. I'm always outside. I'm mostly always traveling or camping outdoors. And I don't ever read the newspaper. I never watch TV. And actually, I didn't hear about it.
Two planes flew into the World Trade Center towers in New York City, and one flew into the Pentagon. Another one crashed in Pennsylvania. You didn't hear about that?
No.
Really?
No, I didn't.
Huh. And then the United States went to war in Afghanistan.
I hadn't heard. Huh. I'm not materialistic. I'm a homeless person, and I love the outdoors.
Like
I love the desert.
What do you like about the desert?
I like the sand and the sage bushes, the shrubberies, the wildlife. Oh. The deserts are like my home. The deserts are beautiful to me.
Saturday morning, Bristlecone Pine Forest in the White Mountains near Bishop, California. Elevation 10,000 feet. Lupe Portis from Anaheim has a rifle and a fluorescent yellow vest.
Have you seen any deer yet?
None.
How many days have you?
I've been here since Wednesday, and the opening day was Saturday, but I haven't seen no deer.
Huh. You seem like you still have fun, even if you don't get a deer.
No, you just come down here and have fun and say, you know, if you don't get your kill, your deer, as long as the Lord takes you home safe, that's the main thing. When I come down here hunting, I see these my friends and other people that I don't know having a great time. What country can you go and do the same? You cannot even go to Canada and do the same and hunt like we do. You know, things will happen. There'll be always somebody hating the United States. You know, that's why we have, you know, the CIA, the FBI. We have so many people, so many agencies that are, you know, protecting us. So I feel very comfortable, you know.
Really, you feel comfortable with the FBI and the CIA protecting you?
Oh, yes. I mean, especially the armed forces. Those are the guys that do everything for us, you know. Because freedom is, believe me, I die for freedom.
Why do you say that?
Because I love my country.
Sunday, 3 p.m., Grandview Point, south rim of the Grand Canyon. Mike from Lafayette, Louisiana, is coming up out of the canyon after going down about halfway, 2,600 vertical feet.
It is truly one of the best things I've ever done. I mean, there's no doubt about it. Just the beauty. It's so quiet out there that it's scary quiet.
He's on vacation with his wife. She's already back at the car waiting. He's talking about how the country went to hell long before 9/11.
Everybody wants something from the government. Nobody wants to do things on their own anymore. Everybody wants a handout. So as it gets little by little by little by little, you are going to have a nation of people that are dependent on the government versus those that are independent and control their own lives.
Well, what about the war on terrorism? You haven't said anything about that. Is that of no concern to you? Or?
I think, and another example of how the government's gotten out of control is how we can't racially profile. Well, I don't think there's been any terrorism with any white Americans. They're all Arabs. So I say you pull all Arabs out of line at the airport and you search them. You don't have to search the white guys and the grannies and the nuns and the guys with plates in their hips. Those people do not create terrorism.
So what do you think about the invading Iraq? You think we should do that?
I'm a big supporter of Bush. To hell with the Europeans. I mean, who cares what they want? To heck with all of them. Disband the Security Council. Disband the whole darn thing. I'm not going to let puppet people from regimes in Africa and Asia and South America have no business telling us what we can do and what we can't do. We pick our battles. I mean, if nobody's picking on us, we have no business meddling in their affairs.
But Iraq really hasn't. How's Iraq picked on us?
That's what I'm saying. They haven't yet. But the first time they do something, we just blow them off the face of the earth. You just have to keep plugging away. I guess it's like the Israeli philosophy. Just every time you pick on me, I'm going to blow up a bunch of yours. Now, you know, it's going to escalate, and I don't know where it ends. But if somebody picks on us, we blow them off the face of the earth. And that's going to irritate other people. But hopefully after you do that two or three times, the other folks are going to get the message and maybe quiet it down a bit.
Wednesday, lunchtime. Trucker's Lounge in the Ozarks of Arkansas. Howard Hickson of Springfield, Missouri, a big man with a full beard, hands built for crushing things, studied history in college.
If somebody comes in and wants to negotiate with you and he's setting car bombs off, no. But you don't go in to a Palestinian neighborhood indiscriminately, just start knocking buildings down, shooting the works up. I mean, how many times can somebody take a gun butt to the mouth before they decide you aren't worth it? They're going to come after you. You know, you get right down to it. It really isn't religion. It's somebody that's trying to use religion to justify out-and-out murder. If they did not have the religious backing that they claim they have and the support and everything, most of these people would be branded out-and-out criminals. We've had the same thing with the Christian religion. You know, going back to the Crusades, take the Irish Catholic conflict, or go to Germany and use this Jewish extermination. I come from a country, you remember the word, the covenant, and the sword from back in the late 70s, early 80s when they had the chase, the shot, all the cops and everything else. They're radical white supremacist religion organization. Everybody was ordained preachers in the whole nine yards. They had these people rob banks, blow things up. God was in their corner. They had a right to take it because God told them to. This person opposed him, therefore he must be the devil, and then strike him down. The M16 was their sword. I knew where the compound was, and they were real, real radical.
1 a.m., a new travel plaza on the Ohio Turnpike. The only customer is sitting at a table going through a bunch of receipts. A trucker, Michael from Baton Rouge.
They say divided we fall, together we stand, we divided. America is divided.
As much as they say that we together, we ain't divided. We ain't together. I mean, we divided.
Okay, so give me a specific example of why
you think. Okay.
That.
Here y'all go. This is me and my Cadillac going down the street on the interstate. I'm sitting on 20s in a 1999 Cadillac sedan DeVille, all blue with tinted windows with the windows down so that you can't see in there. Sitting on 20s, all chrome.
What do you mean sitting on 20s?
20-inch rims, the spoke rims that, you know, most people are buying now. And I'm on the interstate. And I'm on cruise control behind an old white couple, and right there in Louisiana on I-12. But all of a sudden, we pass a state trooper, and the state trooper get behind me and pull me over. When I asked him what's the, you know, what he pulled me over for, he came up tell me a reason. And when he asked to search my car, I told him, yeah. He towed my car up. What he towed my car for? He took my back seats out. He took my radio. He took all that out. Talking about he went to bouncing extra rim. I had an extra rim. He went to bouncing my tires as though he looking for drugs. And he had to let me go. But, I mean, it's some effect. Racism, you know what I'm saying? Harassment. It's a war on my neighborhood. It's a war on the... When I say my people, I'm talking about people that ain't so fortunate, ain't so rich, that ain't got it going. You know, we gotta go through struggle, daily struggle. Them my peoples. The peoples that got to struggle. Them my peoples. Them my peoples, yeah.
Friday, in the wheat field at Gettysburg National Park, inside the pickup truck of retired LA policeman Ed Epperson and his wife Stephanie, who was the stunt woman for Amanda Blake in Gunsmoke.
We're retired now, and we decided that in our retirement we'd drive around and look at some of our national monuments and take a look at our country, you know. Everyone wants to see the Grand Canyon. We've seen that, and we decided to look at some of the battlefields and some of the things that that Americans long before us did that made our way of life so good today. Think about it. All the way back to the Manifest Destiny, the purchase of the Louisiana Purchase, and all of these things that happened so many years ago, give us such a great land to farm, to make a living, to try to excel, education. We've got it all here. This is the little jewel of the world. This is what mankind really, really has strived to have. And we've got it, and so many people today don't realize how much we've got here. Right now, we are the power of the world. And I think our president has a responsibility to maintain that power so that it doesn't become... Like, you take the power you have, you use it properly. We don't start wars, but we're kind of policing our oceans, and we're protecting our commerce. We're protecting our citizens, you know? This whole country is based on international trade. You take that out of the picture, and God, we'll starve to death. We don't make shoes anymore. We don't produce anything here anymore. We're strictly dependent on world trade. So those sea lanes and those tankers that haul those big boxes back and forth, our sea power better be out there to protect it. And we better keep a close eye on these third world nations with idiots like Saddam Hussein and these guys. We pay big bucks for that stuff. You've been to the oil pumps recently. You're paying for it. We're not stealing it from them. We're doing business with them. That's called international trade. That's fine. That's healthy for everybody. Now, how the Arabs hold all this wealth that they get and what they do with it, that's their problem. You know, and I notice we haven't been interfering with that, which is good. That's their problem. And if they decide to keep their people down and dumb and, you know, in the desert and making their empires bigger and their military bigger, which they do, that's their business. But when it becomes a threat to the free world with atomic weapons and biological weapons and so forth, yeah, we better take a hard look at it. We have an absolute... Not a right, but we have an obligation to do that. These bandits are a threat to our existence.
Sunday afternoon, Brooklyn Heights, just across the East River, looking back at Lower Manhattan. Garrett McConnell lives just a few blocks away.
I really thought they had dropped an atom bomb on the city. It was so astronomically loud. I don't think anybody who wasn't there could imagine how devastating that was. And I think I was screaming before I even knew I was screaming, and then people were screaming around me on the rooftops. But you couldn't see your hands. So much smoke. you know, and for whatever reason, we got most of the smoke. I'm not really sure why. It's just the way the wind went. I remember this particular smell, and it was just so horrifying knowing that, you know, that smell wasn't just the asbestos or the steel or the papers. It was people. You know, it's their bones, it's their flesh, it's everything. And so once you realize that, it was, like, doubly horrifying, you know, to have the wind shift and to, you know, you're thinking you're getting over it, and then the wind would shift, and then you'd smell this particular smell and start crying. And, I mean, this happened through December. September, October, yeah, it's 4 months. I am really, truly opposed to what the president is doing right now. We're riding a very thin line between, like, a World War III with nuclear weapons. I mean, this is the biggest fear I have. And since I had it happen in my backyard, I really personally do not want to have a world where, you know, every week, like in Israel, somebody's blowing themselves up in New York, because that's where they're going to come. They are actually not going to come to Montana. They're not going to go to a small town in Iowa. You know, we are the world in terms of money, and we've made ourselves that way, and people hate us for it.
The basic notion of our founding fathers was that nobody really knew what was going on. Their solution was that everybody should say what they believed was going on, because the truth would eventually emerge through the argument. Is that how it really works? Do we keep talking to each other and eventually come to an understanding, or do we just yak and yak and then the world crashes down on us, like it was going to do anyway? Should we talk about this or not?
That piece came from Scott Carrier. I'm Jay Ellison, and you're hearing Voices. Our next piece comes from a conversation between the Boston journalist Christopher Lydon and Amber. Amber is a talk show caller, and she has a lot to say about America and the way it talks and acts in a global context. Lydon says of Amber, "She's a young woman without a country, without identity papers. She's been living in America for almost 20 years now, an impoverished guest at our rich table. An exile in our midst, uninvited, maybe not quite welcome, but she notices things."
I was born and raised in the West Indies. I'm the strange little hybrid creature of the new world, the old world. I'm African as far as I'm concerned because of where my roots are. I'm American in the big context of that word American. I'm European based on having Scottish grandparents. I'm English based on the education I had. I'm Latino based on where my grandmother and one grandfather came from, and I was raised to believe there's nothing wrong with that. I was told that was a fabulous thing to be. It was great to be able to enjoy Cuban jazz and yet want to read Dickens, to love Elvis and yet to love Calypso, and still know who the hell Picasso was. And I was told that was the heart of what globalism was. You would think that I would be eating this idea of globalism up, but I'm not. The only thing it appears to stand for anymore is the idea that an American businessman can pay a teenager in the Philippines 5 cents a day to make Nikes so American kids can walk around the streets in them. And then we all sit around and pretend we're one big connected society, which we are not. We're further apart now than we have ever been before. We're just a lot better at buying McDonald's. That's all globalism has become today. Things are tighter than they've ever been. You can't get in here, here being America. You can't move around in here. There is nothing but fear and suspicion on the ground level, and Europe, you know, is slowly becoming the United States of Europe as well. It used to be you could count on this notion of jobs that real, quote-unquote, Americans didn't want. There was almost a secret code that folks were needed to come here without papers, without their green card, to clean those toilets, wipe those kids' behinds, stuff like that. Now, no one's even hiring for those jobs anymore because, you know, we might be the wrong God-worshipping heathens looking to do damage. Even that little small portal to globalism appears to be disappearing.
Amber, you live inside this country but outside the gates, in a certain way, of the society itself. What's it like to deal with the sort of the dark side of INS restrictions all the time?
You mean I can't mail a letter in the main post office of the city I've lived in for 15 years?
Why not? Tell me.
because I don't have a Massachusetts ID and a Social Security number. When I've tried to go to Boston Housing to report a landlord who is malicious, they will not let you in without that number. And either you leave right away or you sit there and you try to invent a lie.
Amber, you say it's tough to get into the society, but what about into the conversation, into the culture?
Yes, the great national and international debates and dialogue of our day. I'm supposed to
pretend... Are you sneering?
Yes, I am. I'm supposed to pretend at this stage that, you know, the microphone has gotten bigger or it's being passed around to more people, but that's a lie. The conversation has not gotten bigger. It is the same people, the same voices, at the same seats, at the same table. It's the interests of the comfortable, the interests of those in power, the interests of the satisfied. Wouldn't it be great if Americans could look at Africa and see a place, and I'm using Africa solely as an example, could see a place with millions of human lives, rich lives, diverse lives, interesting lives, lives that want to read and learn about Sigmund Freud and William Shakespeare, lives that might be the next Sigmund Freud or William Shakespeare, lives that could teach America and Americans so much. Wouldn't that be great if that was part of this globalism? Shakespeare and Port-au-Prince, debating Freud in Beijing, loving Billie Holiday in Berlin, eating jerk pork in Moscow, that's my idea of globalism.
Hmm.
We would be enjoying what it means to be human at its core, to be global, to be us.
That was Amber in a talk show conversation with Christopher Lydon, excerpted from his 2003 radio series, The Whole Wide World. Radio allows us to debate, to share ideas, to persuade, to reach consensus, influence policy, accommodate compromise. Voice is central to democracy, what we say, how we listen. In these days, the questions are, what are you hearing? What do you have to say? Are you saying it? I'm Jay Allison. This hour was produced by Vicky Merrick and me. Music came from Keith Jarrett, Rye Cooter, and Bela Fleck and the Flecktones. All the pieces are featured on the public radio website, transom.org, which comes from Atlantic Public Media at WCAI in Woods Hole, Massachusetts. Support for the pieces came from the Open Studio Project. There are links to all the producers whose stories you heard at hearingvoices.com.
Hearing Voices is supported by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, a private corporation funded by the American people, and the National Endowment for the Arts, which believes a great nation deserves great art. Our producers are Scott Carrier, Ann Hepperman, Larry Massett, and Kara Oler. Our intern is Max Darum. Mix engineer is Robin Wise of SoundImagery.com. Executive producer is Barrett Golding. From NPR, National Public Radio, this is HearingVoices.com.